Okay, I hope I have all the tapes going well. The question I'd like to challenge you with this evening is going to be the topic of our discussion. First, I'm going to give you an overview of what this class is going to be about. It's called Food for Thought, and a lot of people had a lot of different ideas about what that exactly means. It is not a halakha class, although we will be addressing some areas of halakha along the way. The halakha class is that way. If you want to go, feel free. That's the other's fault. There are no insults, nothing personal taken. I'm very happy. As long as people learn Torah, I really don't care who they learn it from, as long as it's within the guidelines of Torah Judaism. So go right ahead. The reason that the class is called Food for Thought is because I decided that the title Topics in Bereishit from last term was sort of boring. So, like, even though the class content I found fascinating, but the topic is not a very stimulating title. So we chose Food for Thought. Even though it says on the chart outside that it's Bereishit with Rina Salter, it's not Bereishit with Rina Salter, but we're going to be doing a few things from Bereishit. We're basically going to be going through Tanakh and the Jewish life cycle, and seeing, we're examining stories and situations in which food plays a major role. I hope that this is going to work out. The last session, I'd like to have a cooking demonstration from one of the chefs from Matt Prentiss. There's no reason why it shouldn't work out. From one of Matt Prentiss's chefs to demonstrate for us some of the foods that we'll be talking about. We'll be dealing with the story of Esav and his brother Yaakov, right? Lentil soup. We'll be talking about Tamar, Amnon and Tamar making him the revolt before he raped her. We'll be talking about Eliyahu and the Elnana, the widow, who had no food, and Eliyahu did a major miracle and made her have an endless supply of food. We'll talk about the story of Ya'el and Tisra, where again food plays a major role. Wine is going to be one of the themes we'll be developing, where she feeds him wine and cheese and gets him drunk and sleepy enough so that he can fall asleep and she can then kill him and lead the Jews to victory. We'll be comparing that with the story of Yehudit, which is a very similar story around the Hanukkah time, so we'll talk about that a little bit. We'll be talking about wine 1 week, exclusively in terms of wine and halakha, the different areas of life that wine is involved, when a woman can be motzi somebody else and when she can't be, when she's obligated and she isn't, with wine halakhas, what to do about drinking wine with non-Jewish friends, about what do you do now that Kedem grape juice in certain size bottles is no longer mevushal, so how do you, conduct your life differently or not. That's going to be one class, and then hopefully we'll be able to couple that with a wine tasting. Also, so it's going to be like a little of little substance and fluff both together. At the end. No. The wine tasting will be at the same part, but at the end of that session. 1 week, we will be joining forces with Ezrat Nasim, our new women's division, to do a week on challah baking. It's going to be the beginning of December. I'm going to be giving a short class beforehand. About the halachot of challah, the significance, what we take challah, something that was just presented to me this week. Are you allowed to burn the challah in your oven, or does that make your oven trash? Since you can't eat it, does that make it not kosher? And I'm like, what? So, interesting question, right? So we'll leave you in suspense. We'll come to the class. That's going to be in somebody's home. That class is going to be in somebody's home. It's going to be a half an hour class, and then the rest of the evening will be demonstration of different doughs, how to make the dough, how to braid the dough, and stuff like that. I'm hoping that one of them will be how to make round challah, because I cannot for the life of me make round challah that doesn't poof up or open up or whatever. Okay, so that's basically an overview for the next 8 weeks of what we'll be doing. So this evening we're going to start with what was the Eitz HaDaat? What kind of tree was the tree of knowledge? We are starting with Bereishit. Tanakh is my area that I've had the most experience with. So you have in front of you Chumashim. I'd like you to take a few moments to look through chapters 2 and 3 of Bereishit, Genesis, with a study partner. And tell me, based on what is written in the text, and those of you who were here and saw my overhead beforehand, please try to erase it from your mind. To see the possibilities of what was the Eitz HaDaat, what kind of tree was the tree of knowledge that Chava ate from. And I even was going to bring you know, I'm very into art stuff and connecting it to Tanakh, and I was going to bring you a painting of Eve eating from the forbidden fruit to see what, Middle Ages or Renaissance or modern painters thought the forbidden fruit was, but none of them were appropriate for the venue that we are meeting in. So, yeah, because if you remember from the text, Adam and Chava were neither clothed, neither of them are clothed beforehand. So, with a study partner, please look through those two first, those second and third chapters of Bereishit, and tell me what do you think was the eighth of that. And then the second half of our class really is going to be who cares. Let's start with a partner. This is your job. You don't smell?
I'm trying to roll the part.
No, chapters 2 and 3. No, you know, the beginning of the chapter. And what was your... Take care. Okay, take a look. Based on what is written in the text, what kind of shoes is she wearing? So we can maybe put your answer or the bulk of the story is going to be in the third chapter. You can look at Pashuk Kedvav, Kedzayin in Parak Bet, verses 15, 16, 17 to see. Hi. To see the description of when the tree was created, but the bulk of the story is going to be in chapter 3.
What? You know what? Because nobody else can hear you and tell you anything different. But you have to remember everything.
Thank you.
What does she think of?
I think that's what she's doing.
Okay, we'll go with your choice. Oh, look, I'm here. I just came from dinner. Whatever.
Okay, we have a few different ideas floating around as usual. What do you think? Let's share them with the group.
Was apple tree such a part? I think it was an apple tree.
You think it was an apple tree because of what?
The apple. They hear the beautiful tree, beautiful tree. Apples are beautiful. And the apple tree is also a beautiful tree.
Apple blossoms are beautiful flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Excellent. It could have been an apple because apples are beautiful.
Someone with knowledge.
Okay. Full of knowledge, like interesting. And because the tree, Ramon is a pomegranate, so because the tree was a tree of knowledge, so a person, since colloquially a person is, I've never heard that term, is that colloquial?
I always say
Ramon. That a person who's very knowledgeable is referred to, is compared to a pomegranate, so therefore it could be a pomegranate. Good. What else? Big tree, because?
Because he covers himself with big leaves.
And where is that? At the end of? The end of the paragraph. In the middle of the third car, okay. And they showed fig leaves, so they would have grabbed from the closest tree, and which is what they were standing under, so it was fig leaves. Good. So we have now apples because they're beautiful, pomegranates because people colloquially are referred, people with knowledge are referred to like pomegranates, and fig leaves because that's what they covered themselves up with. Another idea. We have one back here. In Etrog. In Etrog, why? Right. Excellent. Good. So it could be that they looked at the fruit. It was very enticing. She grabbed it. She ate of it. And the consequence of it, as well as the taste, was not what she expected to be. So this debate comes up in the Gemara in two very interesting places. The first source that I brought you is in Brachot, and the second source is in Sanhedrin. And on the bottom I brought you a translation. It's the same Gemara in both places. I just want to give you a little background. And the Gemara in Brachot is discussing about Brachot that we make. So the Gemara says as follows. If you make, on any fruit that grows from the tree, if you make a borei peri ha'adama on it, it's okay anyway, because the tree grows from the ground. But on a fruit that really should be ha'adama, if you say a borei peri ha'etz on it, it's not good. You have to say the correct bracha over again. And on anything, if you say a shahakol, it's fine for anything. That's always the rule of thumb. If you don't know what the bracha is, you say shahakol, because shahakol means that everything was created by God's will, you know, so that covers really everything. So that's the discussion with Gemara. So then the Gemara asks the question, what about wheat? What's wheat? It grows in the ground. Is it, but it grows, you know, if you've seen wheat like grow, that. It's in very tall stalks. So is it a tree? Is it from the ground? What is it from? So the opinion that's presented in the Gemara is that, of course, it's a tree. How do I know that it's a tree? Because there are three opinions as to what the tree was that Adam ate from, and that's what our Gemara is down here. So Tanya, Ilan Shachal Mimenu Adam Harishon. What was the tree? I am in the first line of Brachot. And the English translation is on the bottom. I'm going to freely translate it as we go along. What was the tree that Adam ate from it, the first man ate from? Rabbi Meir Omer, Rabbi Meir says, Gefen Haya. It was a grape tree. Or a vine. She'ein lacha davar she'mevi yilala al ha'adam el yayin. That nothing brings wailing and lamenting to a man more than wine does. She'ne'a amar, and then he quotes a pasuk, v'yesh min ha'mayim v'yishaker. He drank from the wine and became drunk, which is referring to Noah. Does anybody remember what happened to Noah when he drank from the wine and became drunk? He fell asleep. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then all of a sudden he woke up and he's like, oh my gosh, what's going on? And then, okay. Number two. So that's opinion number one. Number two. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, in the second line, the fifth word from the end. Rabbi Nechemya Omer, te'ena haita. It was a fig tree. Ding, ding, ding. Shabidavar, shenitzkal, kalu, bo nitaknu. That with the thing that they spoiled themselves with, that's what they wanted to, that's how they tried to remedy themselves. That they sold to themselves fig leaves. So the same idea as Shifi was presenting, that is from the fig leaves, not simply though because of the proximity, but actually that intentionally they chose from the fig leaves because that was where how they sinned, the root, and that's how they wanted to fix it. For instance, if a person, you know, the Brady Bunch, mom always said, don't play ball in the house. They break the vase, so how do you fix it? You glue the vase back together or replace the vase. Or buy flowers for a new vase or something, do something connected instead of simply just blanket, you know, I'm sorry, to actually do something to address what you did wrong. And the third opinion of Yehuda Omer Chita Haita, it was leaked. She'ein hatinok yodea likod abba ve'ima ad she'iton ta'am dagan, that a child doesn't know to be acknowledged, doesn't know how to call for his parents until he tastes the fruit, the taste of the wheat. And I took these opinions and I made them real, like that. I have them in Hebrew, but I don't feel like that was just my knowledge. But here you have them. So here we have the three opinions. But we now present the first opinion. It was a grape tree because no substance brings lament more than wine does. And he quotes the Pasuk from Noah. Rabbi Nechemya says it was a fig tree because they're remedied by the object by which they sinned. They sowed fig leaves, and Rabbi Yehuda presents the root wheat. A child doesn't know how to call for his parents until he tastes the taste of wheat. But the question is, what does it mean, the tree of knowledge? That what was this knowledge that was acquired? It was knowledge that like a child would acquire. I'm not going to leave this alone because it's going right.
I don't get that. The child does not know what.
Okay, so now let's do it from the backwards forward. No, I was writing on that wall, on a thing on that wall there. Yeah. Not on the wall, on the wipe off board on the wall. Okay, so let's work backwards to Florence. The wheat, because a child doesn't know how to call his parents until he tastes wheat.
What is it?
What is that?
Wheat cereal?
What is that?
Wheat cereal?
Right. Okay, which means what about Adam and Chava at the stage that they were when they ate from the tree, which was before they had tasted, let's say that it was wheat, before they had tasted from the wheat tree. What do we know then about their stage? They were like children. They were like children, like babies. Personally, this doesn't really do it for me, because that means then that how could they be punished for something then that they did without choosing to do it? They did it as babies. You don't punish a baby for doing something, right? So then you could say, okay, well, the expulsion from the Garden of Eden wasn't a punishment as much as a reality, a consequence. Now that you have tasted from knowledge and are now sophisticated and are at this point and are no longer children, now you cannot exist in Gan Eden. Yes. So something, and they stumble upon something that all of a sudden makes them lose their innocence. Right. So here they stumbled upon this tree. They ate them, they were told no. And what is a child? This fits in very nicely, you know, in one aspect of it. What does a child do when you say no? Yes, you know. So a child at this stage before understanding the difference between right and wrong. So, okay. That's one opinion. Therefore, that sort of addresses our so what. This is our real question. Is so what? What does this have to do with wheat? So he says that a child, until the child eats wheat, eats solid foods, the child doesn't know anything. Just like Adam and Chava, before they ate the wheat, they didn't know anything. And now that they ate the wheat, not that there's necessarily a connection between that because you eat the wheat, now you're going to know things. But those are two things that might happen at the same time to indicate a moving to the next step, the next stage of growing up, of maturity. Or immaturity before you reach maturity. Whatever. Okay, that's that. Now let's skip to the fig. On to the great class. What do you think about the fig? Who cares? Okay, we understand who cares why it was. We understand the who cares about why it was a wheat tree. Now, we explained it because it explains to us something about the stage and the state that Adam and Hava were in when they ate from the tree of knowledge, that they were innocent, that they didn't know what they were doing, and that the expulsion from Gan Eden wasn't so much a punishment as a reality and a necessary consequence. What about the fig? Okay.
What's in that tree?
Wheat. Okay, fine. That's why there are three opinions in the Gemara. Like, this is exactly how the Gemara was written. You know, I was talking about it before Yantif. I was talking about it with my students. How was the Gemara written? How did it come up that A said this and B said that and C said that? They were all sitting around the table and A said X and B said, what are you, nuts? A wheat isn't a tree. You know, it doesn't have a bark, it doesn't have leaves, it doesn't have the whole thing that makes it, doesn't have roots, it doesn't, you have to plant it every year, it's not a tree. I think it was a fig tree.
Why would
he go up to the fig, which is, you got to be aware of this, you're like, uh-oh, now we're no longer in the fig, we should have taken more to cover ourselves? Good. So, my question go into this, like, crazy. So, the way Rashi explains it is he says, they looked at the tree and they said, he did something wrong with the tree, now we're trying to make something right with the tree, because if you remember, and if you look in the sources, they weren't forbidden from touching the tree, they were forbidden from eating from the tree. So therefore, they were permitted to take possibly other parts of the tree for other benefits. They're saying, okay, now we did what we weren't supposed to do. Now let's do within the guidelines of what we are supposed to do. Within the guidelines of what we are supposed to do. Let's try that and see if that'll work. Okay, so fig tree. Fine. So that's what they say, fig tree, because they tried to remedy what they did. What about wine? A grape tree.
What about it?
Who would come up with this? Right. Like, and who cares? What would be your purpose? Our purpose in saying that it was wheat was saying that they didn't really know beforehand. Our purpose in saying that it was fig is because really it fits right into the psukim. What about wine? What about grapes? Why would you say that it's a grape tree? Okay, a vine. Okay, but what bracha do you make on grapes? A ha'ech. Anyway, so it's considered like a tree, I guess. I don't know what the definition of tree is. Ah, right. Okay, so here's, I want to look at a number of sources that I brought you on the next page. Sources 3, 4, and 5. It looks very confusing, but it's really, really not. I brought you sources 3 and 4 are from what we call the topic of what we call the Isha Sotah, the wayward wife, the wife who has gone astray. Topic number 5 is from the Nazir, the man who or woman who decides that she, Libriyot, is going to refrain from certain amounts of physical pleasure for a specified amount of time. And there is a category of this kind of person in the Torah. So let's start with source number 5, since it was actually brought up. Okay. By Deber Hashem El Moshe Lemor, God said to Moshe to say the following, Taber b'nei Yisrael v'amarta, let him speak to the Jewish people and tell them, Ish o isha ki afli linzor neder nazir, a man or woman who makes this swearing, who actually articulates an oath to be a nazir, l'hazir l'Hashem, to separate from certain physical things for God. Miyayin v'shecha yazir. He should, what are the things, you know, we're not talking about a blanket aesthetic. We're not talking about a person who says, I'm not going to participate in any physical pleasures whatsoever in any part of the physical world. You're talking about a nazir, which is a person who chooses to separate from specific three things. from grapes and grape products, from cutting his hair and any part of his body, and from coming in contact with any dead person, even a relative. So this person, this man or woman, is making this choice and making this decision that for a certain specified amount of time, and the generally accepted interpretation of that is that it should not be for more than 30 days, should not be for less than or more than 30 days. For this amount of time, he's choosing to separate from these three things. So the Torah then goes on to say, what is he going to say? What's the first thing he's separating from? From wine and any intoxicants. He shouldn't drink the fermentation of wine or the fermentation of any liquor. He shouldn't eat any products of grapes. He shouldn't eat any wet or dry grapes, meaning no raisin. The Torah goes on for two entire pesukim, delineating to you nothing, absolutely nothing at all remotely related to grapes. So now we ask this big question, okay, I understand why not from any fermented anything. Why not? Because what could fermented grapes lead to? Yes, okay, and a loss of one's senses and a loss of one's direction and stuff like that. Okay. So he says, I'm going to be totally devoted to God. I'm going to be totally focused to God, and I'm not going to do any of these other things. I'm not going to have any drinking or anything like that. Fine. But what about grapes themselves or raisins? As was just mentioned here not 5 minutes ago, you don't get drunk on grapes or raisins. So the commentators have two interpretations. One commentator, the Shafer Afinov, says, actually, yes, there are some intoxicating qualities to grapes and raisins, and the scientists have proven it such. That's medieval science for you. But the other opinion, and the more prominent opinion, the one that more people agree with, is that you're just putting a fence around it, just so he won't even come to any kind of intoxicating grape products, or he shouldn't touch even raisins or even grapes himself. That's the idea. Remember, a Nazir is an extreme situation. And by the way, there is a whole discussion about if this is a good thing or a bad thing anyway, to start with, if it's good or bad, because when a person finishes his Nisi Rut, when he decides that the time is up, he has to bring a Korban Chatat, a sacrifice of atonement. The question is, what did he do wrong? So some of the commentators say what he did wrong is that he ended his time period, but what some of the commentators say is what he did wrong is that he started it altogether. These things are in this world for us to partake of, in moderation, but to partake of. You're not supposed to just not have anything to do with the physical world. Okay, so that's that. That's the Nazir. So now let's take a step backwards to the Shashota. And here we're going to do, anybody know anything about the Shashota? The wayward woman. The woman who has gone astray. The woman who is actually the suspected adulteress. Suspected. But what about before she gets there? Who has to drink bar? What has to happen to her first? Yes. Okay, but before that, before she gets to the whole step, there are certain criteria that she has to fulfill, like a checklist, but she has to have done a certain number of things in order for her to come to that.
She has to be warned.
Right. Just be warned in front of two witnesses not to be alone with a particular, specific one man. And she has to have been seen by two witnesses to have entered into seclusion by that, with that particular one man. In other words, if she was warned not to go in with X, and two witnesses saw her go into a private room with Y, she doesn't drink the water. If she was warned only in front of one person not to go in with X, and she goes in with X, she doesn't drink the water. If she's warned in front of two people not to go in with X, and she goes in with him, but nobody sees her, she doesn't use waters. And then the question is, they also have to be in that room, in the secluded room, for the amount of time that something inappropriate could happen. And she has to swear that nothing, that if she swears that something did happen, she doesn't drink the waters either. It's all suspected. It's if you don't know if something happened or not, all you know is that she went into this room privately with this person that she was warned not to go into the room with, and she drinks the waters. And what are these waters? he mixes nadiposin and tribimsin, and if she is suspected, if the suspicion is confirmed, and if it's true, her legs fall off, her stomach falls off, and she hopefully dies afterwards. Her whole body is actually affected. If she is innocent, she gets to go back to her husband. What a wonderful trusting relationship that will be. Okay.
What, the leg stone? Or that, that somebody actually did this?
I'll tell you that when I was teaching it, I just taught it about a month ago in school, 2 months ago now, and we're in the teacher's room. And I thought I had remembered in my mind that it hadn't happened. So I said to Rebbe Shobel and to Tali, I said, "Does that ever happen?" I said, "Sure. Why not?" So Tali said, "I heard a story of like in the 18..." She's full of these kinds of stories. In the 1880s or something, where a woman, where it was the same kind of thing, but they weren't doing it, of course, anymore. They weren't doing the drinking anymore, but she fulfilled all the criteria and everything, and even though they weren't drinking the waters, her body parts were affected in the same way that they would have been had she drank the waters.
The question is, what did she confess, or how did...
Historical took care of her.
Okay.
Because that's the other question, you know. There's
like
the other question.
Like
so this is what my students are saying. What do you mean if she was warned not to go in with X and she goes into... If she was warned not to go in with X, but she goes in with Y, so she doesn't have to drink the water. What do you mean she doesn't have to drink water? I said, if I start with things here. But this system is only for very specific, particular...
Okay.
So why is she called an Isha Shoka? Because the Torah says, and I underline this in source 3, Kitish Teishto. And there's a big question, what does this mean? The English translation I brought you is, if a man's wife has gone astray. But this word is like a very strange word in the Hebrew language, kitishke isto. And Rashi says something very interesting. He brings this to mind, and he says as follows, on the left-hand side, a rabbi's part. Adulterers do not commit adultery until there enters into them a spirit of fire, a ruach stew.
Really?
Okay. You've heard it before, huh? Okay. And this is where the language of Kitishta of an Isha Sota comes from, the sin and the tet, or the sin and the tet of stut. Ruach stut. So where does this come from, this ruach stut? You know, how does a ruach, a person will only be an adulterer if a ruach stut, if this spirit of folly has entered him. So how does the spirit of folly enter him? What? So I sort of want to say that one of the things that's done in her in the process is that the waters are mixed in an earthenware container. Why are the waters mixed in an earthenware container as opposed to glass or silk? Well, there wasn't glass at that time, but silver or gold or precious metal. So Rashi explains, she gave the adulterer to drink fine wine in beautiful cups, therefore let her drink the bitter water in a despised piece of earthen vessel. So wine is featured in the story of the Isha Sota, the suspected adulteress. Wine has some type of a play. So far I set up for you, number one, that only a woman or a man who has this folly entered into them is going to commit this. Number two, there was wine involved in the seduction, whichever way it went. They drank wine together in beautiful cups. Therefore, when the process happens, she drinks from an earthenware container. And look at the third Rashi on the bottom of the page. We have this big question I didn't tell you, but the story of Nazir, the laws of Nazir, and the story of the wayward wife are written immediately next to each other. Whereas really, the story of Nazir, the laws of the ascetic, the person who decides to separate from certain physical things, should be written in another section of the Torah, where the other oaths are written. I swear I will do this, I swear I won't do that, I swear I'll do whatever. That's really where it should be written. Why is it written next to the Isha Sota story? Says Rashi, why is the section of the Nazirite adjoined to the section of a woman suspected from faithlessness to inform you that whoever sees a faithless wife in her degradation shall separate himself from wine, which brings one to adultery. So, now let's look back for a moment at the story of the Eitz Hadat. Can someone fit it all in now? Why would someone say that the tree of knowledge is wine, is grapes? Okay. Could you elaborate on that a little bit? Right. Which is interesting because that is clearly what happens after the eggs are done. That they didn't obey the commandments. But what happens
before they even pass the commandments
or whatever it was? Right. So last time we were talking,
it wasn't that they just began it after they had it, but they were taking it and eating it.
Taking it, they could touch it.
But eating it,
they get affected by the substance or whatever that affects them because they didn't touch it first. I mean, they didn't eat it first. They actually committed the wrong before they actually took it.
According to what has been presented so far, a person sins because they're drunk. Which means that first they're going to have a person sins because they're drunk.
Uh-huh.
Right? So which means that first they're going to ingest it and then they're going to sin.
Which
but
is
that's
the
not what happened.
First they
sinned, and then they ingested it, and then
they tried to sin.
Right. So why would one say, why would a believer say that the tree was a Gethsemane? It was a great time. If they were drunk or had no sense of right and wrong before they chose from the tree, then why would he make it that the tree itself is a Gethsemane?
Because of the temptation.
Hmm?
Because of what is the temptation?
What is the...
Because the tree was a temptation for them.
Okay. The tree was a temptation for them. But if we're saying that they took from it, they were tempted because they were drunk, then they have to take from it before they... I take from it. Right, when did they get drunk? I think the answer is becoming very, yes. I think the point is, like, it doesn't fit into the psukim, and it doesn't fit into the story, but the point is that Rabbi Meir wanted to give you a point that grapes and drunkenness, the only more drunkenness is trouble. The drunkenness is bad. So I think that that's why he was making the connection, even though it doesn't really fit into the story. The one of the three opinions, one that fits into the story best, is the figs. Because they took straight from the tree, the figs were there, fits into context, etc., etc. But I just want to show you on the next page. I brought you the story of Noah, of what happened when Noah drank the wine. Noah came out of the Teva. Hashem tells him at the beginning here of chapter 9 in Bereishit, Hashem tells him, come out of the Teva, you, your children, your sons' wives, your wife, everybody, come out of the Teva. And Noah was the first to plant the vineyard. So Rashi jumps on us and asks this huge question. Where'd he get it from? You know? Okay, what did he bring in the Teva with him? He brought animals. He brought his family. He brought food for his family and his animals. You don't hear anything about him preparing for life in the new world by bringing vegetation that could be planted afterwards. There's no mention of that. So what does Rashi say? When he entered the ark, you see where it says Rashi right there. When he entered the ark, he brought in with him grapevines and fruits for the preservation of fig trees. I read this, I said, oh my gosh, here's our Gemara. Here we have this thing right here in this Rashi. Where did he bring the fruit, where did he bring the seeds from? From Gan Eden. From the air of Gan Eden. What did he bring with him? The fig? The grapes? And the wheat, because what else do you think that they ate the whole time and the animals ate the whole time? They ate grain the whole time. So what do you do with this now? So I read this and I said as follows. Earlier, before Noah actually comes out of the table, actually after Noah comes out of the table and Hashem is showing him the rainbow, Hashem says, and this is in verse number 7, I underlined it for you, he says, Hashem says, now I know that man's root is evil. Man is just going to do bad things all the time. What was Noah rebuilding his new world with?
Old.
The very things that they sinned with in the old world. The grapes, the figs, the wheat. in Weight Watchers, they say that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting to get different results. Mm-hmm. Well, you had it right here. They could, but of all the things we chose to, right, so now that's for other things. And then you say also, these are things that are the basis of our civilization. Chita. Wheat. This is what we all eat. This is our food. This is our sustenance. This is what keeps us going, what keeps us alive. Number two, the figs and the wine. I want to point out to you that in the Navi, when the Navi wants to tell us that the time was a beautiful, amazing, great time, and everybody was rich and everybody was wealthy, the Navi says, each person sat under his vine, his grapevine, and under his fig tree. That's used as a sign of prosperity. Wine is something of excess. It's something that's extra. You know, the grapes are good, but the wine is like extra. It's something, you know, it takes us beyond. And the figs is a sign of wealth. The Torah tells us also that what are the three things the Torah always talks about? He talks about the Dagan and the Tiroz, the Dagan and the Tiroz. These are the three things. This is the wheat, the Te'ina, the figs, and the grapes. So here we have, on the one hand, these things are what keeps us going. The chita is what keeps us going. The teina and the yachin are the extra. The figs and the grapes are the extra, but they're still there. They're the sign of prosperity. But at the same time, these are the very things that Chazal chose to pinpoint to say, this is how he sinned. This is how Adam and Chava sinned. That would be, and this also takes us back to what we were saying last term about what was the sin of the tree. Abraminel was telling us that the sin of the tree was a sin of excess. That it's okay to touch it and it's okay to look at it. But when you ingest it, that was the problem. When you ingest the physicality, then you become part of the physicality as well. And I wanted to tie it together, to go back to the first page, just to go back to a minute what I said before about Noah bringing the very things, even though they are sustaining, they're also the very things with which Adam and Chava sinned. The second Gemara, which is the exact same wording as the Gemara that I showed you, but the context is different. The words are the same discussion, what was the tree that Adam sinned from. But the context of the Gemara in Sanhedrin is different. The context of the Gemara in Bracha was, what Bracha do you make on wheat? Is wheat from a ha'is or from a ha'adamah? The context of the Gemara in Sanhedrin is that when Noah planted this vineyard, the Gemara says, Hashem said to Noah, Noah, didn't you learn from Adam? Didn't you learn from what he did and what happened to him? Why are you doing it? Why are you starting the whole cycle all over again? And then the Gemara says, oh, but that's only one opinion that it was figs. Another opinion is that it was figs, and another opinion is that it was wheat. So it's...
But what answer? No.
Nothing. He did it already. He didn't write. There's no... That's the beauty of the Gemara. It just sort of leaves you hanging there.
Didn't Hashem know he was bringing this in?
Of course. So then... But that's a major question of free choice versus God being all knowledgeable in general. And that's exactly what the Gemara said, basically. Hashem saw him planting these things. He knew he was bringing it in. He said to him, what are you doing? What are you thinking? You know, but he couldn't stop him because Noah is a person. And that's also a lesson that Hashem learned from the flood, is that he can't run the world the way he wants it to. He has to let man run the world the way they want it to. When they mess up badly enough, he'll come in and clean it up. But he has to let man run the world.
He didn't say, don't take him.
Right.
No, he didn't. He did it, right. You know, he realized it. So the first time when they ate from the Geffen, when they sinned, Hashem like blew up. You know, get out of this yarn. You know, you don't belong in here. This is not the way things were supposed to be. And now when Noah plants it and the whole thing happens again, Hashem is sort of taking a step back and saying, maybe I reacted very strongly the first time, but I have to see and let things sort of develop, you know. And then in the end, what happened, they developed poorly, and Canaan came and laughed at Noah's nakedness. And what happened in the Akhenaten was punished for that. And Hashem realized that it had to be addressed in a little bit of a different way, that people aren't as pure as he hoped them to be. He says, I realize you're not as pure because you're doing it again. You're taking the same figs and the same grapes and planting them again. So, yes, exactly. So I was looking last night when I was finishing up. When I was finishing up, I said to myself, you know, well, let me just take one last look at the sources. And I found a source that I hadn't noticed when I was preparing, the Radak. The Radak is a medieval commentator on the Chumash, and on this topic of the of what type of tree was the Sage Radak, he says something very interesting. He quotes a very interesting opinion. He says, some say that it was fig. Some say that it was grape. Some say that it was an etrog. And some say, he said, that we don't know what kind of tree it was. Because we, exactly. You hear that before? You hear that? Excellent. You shouldn't embarrass the tree. Exactly. That's exactly what he says. And he brings an example also. And he says that, that the example that he brings isn't really, if a man sins with an animal, that both the man and the animal are killed. Why the animal? It wasn't the animal's fault. The animal didn't do anything, so that nobody should see the animal afterwards on the street and say, that's the animal that did such and such. So he says, and that says, if we have rachamim, we have mercy and compassion on the animals, how much more so God also has compassion on the fruits of the tree. So it's very interesting opinion that he presents. Rashi, by the way, says, after this whole thing now that I presented to you about Rashi saying how wine is bad and wine brings you to sin and all kinds of stuff, Rashi himself actually says it was a fig tree, because that's what fits in best with the story. But I wanted to show you the main point, that's what fits in best with the story, but the main point of the class that I wanted to show you is the who cares part. Who cares what kind of tree it was, if it was an etrog or a teina or a geffen or a krita? And the answer that I hope you got away with, I don't know, I was very distracted. I hope that it came out okay. The answer is that each rabbi who presented his opinion was because there was a life lesson either that he wanted to teach or that there was something he wanted to understand about Adam and Chava themselves. It wasn't, the issue wasn't what kind of tree. The issue was what's the greater story. What are the ramifications of that? What does that tell us about what's going on? And we learn about what's going on through the medium of what was, what kind of tree it was. So that's that. Next week we're going to be discussing the topic of Adam and the three men of Abraham and the three men who came to visit him. The Torah says he listed a whole group of things that he was going to give them, and he didn't bring them everything, and then Rashi goes off and explains why, and which leads us to a whole question of, did the Avot keep the mitzvot? Did Abraham keep kosher? Which is going to be addressed actually on Shabbos of the week after by Rabbi Leitag, but I'm sure I will not be anywhere near to what he's going to say. But so that's our topic for next week. So I hope we'll see you. No, not yet.
Thank you.